Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
Coming up on the show, I'm going to be speaking to Glynis Breitenbach, who is the DAMP. You may know that Josh Lope has today been nominated to serve on the JSE. The DA absolutely objected to that, but former Judge Lope has been accepted by other political parties, so we're going to talk about that. Judas Malema remains in the JSE, so we'll talk about others as well. Glynis Breitenbach as well also remains there. We are also going to be speaking about the droughts in Zimbabwe, a really major concern there. And it is that July unrest anniversary. We're going to be speaking to a survivor. So give us a call on 086-000-959. You can also send us your voice notes on 063-688-0959. I mean, I remember it like yesterday. Tell me your stories. Where were you? And you remember that it was KZN as well as Gauteng mostly affected. Just unreal, unreal how it all panned out. Really, really unreal. We do have on the line Ntatelelo Mkhize, who is a July unrest survivor, on the line with us. I really appreciate you making time for us, Mr. Mkhize. Good evening and welcome.
Hi, good evening, Miss.
I was saying that I remember it like yesterday. For someone who survived an ordeal like yours, the memory must still be very fresh.
Especially when you have suffered like us. We have suffered, financially, physically, emotionally, psychologically. So, the pain and the scars are still visible.
You lost two friends. If you don't mind, take us to what actually happened on the day. And my understanding is that you actually had no idea what is happening.
I actually lost three friends.
Three friends.
Three friends who were in my car. The first one was Ms. Okoda Nzuza, who was working out of the country, was working in Zim. So he couldn't leave the country because of lockdown. So he was by my house, so waiting for everything to get back to its normality. And the second one was Dr. Chiano, who was not just a friend, but was also a brother-in-law. And then Mlamuli Ntsele, who was a friend to me, a friend to Robert Chiano, who was my brother-in-law. So it was just a normal day. Since we were, on lockdown. I mean, Robert Chiano called me in the morning to come and fetch him, to pay me a visit by my house, like we normally do. I fetched him, stayed by my house for a couple of hours, and then he then asked me to drive down to check Mlamuli Ntsele because he was staying by Umakwamashu. Then we drove there. That's when we were getting closer to our death. Because when we were by Umashu, we then received a call to come and eat meat in Konobia. There were guys who were hunters who had made some kill. Guys jumped in my car talking about your Magwaza and the other guys who were not known by me because they were much closer to Magwaza and Giana. So they jumped in my car, we drove to Konobia.
So you were coming from Tuzuma at the time, right?
Yeah, I was residing in Tuzuma at the time. Yeah. So from Tuzuma to Kwamashu, Umashu is just down the cliff. And then when you buy Umashu, going to Konobia, you just pass Mount Edgecombe, just along the road before Umhlanga. So we went there, ate meat, chilled. On our way back around 3, because, we decided to take a shortcut. I'm not familiar with Phoenix till today. So the guy said, no, let's just take the shortcut, because they said there's a route that crosses in between Phoenix and Marsh, who is the other side, is on the other side. That's when we came across, you know, this roadblock where Indians were barricading the road. I mean, we even, you know, discussed it as we were approaching this barricade, and we were like, oh, maybe because there was a water crisis, maybe
the
Indian communities were complaining about, were complaining for water. So that's where everything started, when they demanded searching the car. And then we let them search the car, but it's not like they, you know, politely asked to search the car. But it was just aggressive. Everything was aggressive. But I then advised the guy to, the guys to come down, because we had nothing in the car of any stolen goods, you know. But what annoyed us was that they were not, you know, politely asking us, and they were not explaining anything. They just demanded to search the car. And they were not even police or maybe securities for that matter.
Was there an exchange? I mean, as you are saying, they were quite agitated. It didn't seem like they were quite polite. Did you actually have an exchange of words?
Not really. The only person who had an exchange of words with them was Unzuga, because he asked them who they were. Because they're not even police. Why they demanded to search the car? So when then, but I asked him to calm down, because we had nothing suspicious or maybe stolen or anything of maybe drugs or stolen goods in the car. So I asked him to let it go.
And at that time, you still had no idea what was this about?
We still had no idea. As they say in Zulu, we had no idea. But at the time when we arrived at Colombia, people were drunk and it was busy. We even joked about it. And why people are so drunk, like it's festive season. But we honestly didn't pay much attention to it. So Gandhi, it was last hour, it was our last hours together. So then after they finished touching the car, then there was a small boy, maybe an age of 10, 12 around there.
Yeah.
He, when they were about, when they were letting us pass on that roadblock, this boy hit the car and I stopped. And then Magwaza and Zuza jumped off the car, asking why they're allowing
the boy,
the small boy, hacking the car. I was just shocked. I speaking in the car, then came this fresh Indian guy, fired two bullets.
Somebody else now, not the ones that were searching.
From the very same car.
Oh, okay.
So he came from the passenger side. And then he shot me like with two bullets. So that's everything started. Lamulin really jumped off the car, like, what's happening? He then shot him from his back. He fell down, lied down, he died on the spot.
Good Lord.
Then the chaos started. Well, they were beating us. You know, Robert Gianni and Magwaza managed to flee the scene, which Magwaza, you know, went by the riverbanks, and they called to Robert Gianni. They tied him by the garden there. They butchered him. His intestines were, you know, and then he was... unfortunately for him, he was taken to the hospital, and then I hear he passed on. I'm not sure whether it was after 3 days, 3 or 2 days, then he passed on in the hospital. But for Unzuza, he was, you know, brutally killed because, I mean, they were taking him, beating him with, you know, those baseball bats and the golf sticks. And he was also shot right on the scene.
Nobody at this point, you couldn't hear anyone at this point saying stop, or they were all just attacking.
Nothing. They were all attacking. When I tried to fling the first scene, because I could see far ahead of us, there was another group there barricading the road. They had radios. You know, like the SAPS, I could hear the SAPS noise like they were police. They had radios with them, so they were, you know, calling other guys to block us. So I tried to drive. I managed, as I was approaching them, they started firing, you know, their guns towards the car. As a result, my car, you know, all the windows were broken down, even the windscreen, because they had big guns. They were carrying rifle and pistols. So I managed to drive past them. But I was weak at that time because of the first two bullets. And then as I was going up the cliff there, there was a cliff somewhere there, not familiar with this road, there with the Phoenix Road and Street, but I can take you to the scene because I still recall it as in like yesterday. So there was, you know, a Range Rover Bucky. There was it's a Ford Ranger, if I'm not mistaken. A Ford Ranger Bucky that was chasing me from one particular company, security company. And then when I got up the hill there, there was a big crowd there. Then I stopped because I couldn't see things clearly. I was weak. I stopped the car. And then they came to me, attacked me, you know, kicking me, beating me, you know, taking pictures of me, video somewhere, taking videos, swearing at me. Like, you know, there were times where they would be telling me, no, you know, run to the river, run that side. As I would try to run, their leader would shoot at me, you know. I'd fall down.
How many times were you shot?
Four times.
It's a miracle that you're alive.
If you check on the list, I was once declared dead. I went to coma for
3 weeks, I'm told.
3 weeks and a couple of days. It was a very traumatic experience even for my family because they were called, you know, by, you know, police to inform them that I was no more. You know, even my kid now, even after I was discharged from the hospital, they couldn't even look at me because of the injuries. I was weak. My stomach, my intestines were out because of the operations. Now I was operated like 3 times and they said they couldn't, you know, operate me for the 4th time because, I mean, they said it might even, you know, worsen the wound. So everything turned the other way. Now I've got a deformed stomach. You know, still got wounds, pains. I can't even, you know, walk as normal as before, nor stand like as normal as before. So this has changed a lot of things now because of my physical health. I can't even work like before, meaning, you know, I can't generate money like I used to. Even my side hustle business stopped. So which then again add, you know, the financial constraints. Well, now even the lifestyle has to change. The education for my kids, you know, is compromised. A lot has happened. I think I'm still bearing the consequences of such of that incident. I've even lost a wife, just got divorced. A lot is happening. A lot is happening. You know.
So
hardly sleep, you know. Yeah.
So, you know, this is your own personal account, your
yeah.
own direct account of what happened on the day. There was there was an inquiry. There were many inquiries, and then there were also political fights. And I think for me, this is what's important. While everybody has these political grandstanding moments, you remember that that poster, the ANC calls you racist, the DA calls you heroes. That was put up there by the DA in Phoenix. And of course, much later on, they retracted that and apologized. But for someone who experienced this, when you see all the political grandstanding and you hear all these inquiries, what do these things mean to you?
You know, it's very unfortunate that, you know, our leaders have lost, you know, humanity and their consciousness. Because, I mean, it's only talking about, you know, this political organization, it's only, I hear, it's only EFF that has, you know, came to Africans as victims, spoke to them, you know, demanded justice. But with other political organizations, nothing has happened. And it, with the DA correcting or rectifying that statement, it was only done because there was noise about it. It genuinely doesn't come from a good heart. They were just, you know, they were just retracting their statement on the basis of, hey, you're making noise, shut up. Because from what has happened and even after this whole thing, we've never had anything, even from the current government, the then government, even justice now. We are struggling to get justice because even when you go to the police, you'll be, you know, standing from pillar to post. You know, the documents are missing. They will change statements around. They will, you know, even change your contact number so that no one gets hold of you. You know, a lot of happening. It has gone deeper than what you know, look at from a distance. But for us, especially for me, who's trying to reinstate even the case, it's not happening. It's quite impossible. And we hear some, you know, some very irritating rumors that, you know, some people were paid. So, but we got no proof. And if I were to maybe to go deeper on that, maybe I'll be risking my life again.
Yes. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's the problem. That many feel, even as things have happened, and they do deserve justice, they're afraid. People are afraid of pursuing the truth.
Yeah. We can't be vocal. We can't demand things because when we speak, you know, you'll be getting people telling you to, you know, just let it go, you know, because you might die now because some people were paid. When you hear some were even given cars, some were, you know, paid hard cash, someone was, you know, bought the house. I'm saying it's just a rumor. just to protect myself, because you keep hearing those things. And it's very alarming because, I mean, the cases are not moved, so you're then forced to believe such rumors if things are not happening.
So, with how you feel now, what do you think would be the best thing going forward?
In as much as I want justice, but I mean, I've lost a lot financially. I mean, my life went back maybe by 6 years. I mean, I've lost a car, I've lost my hustling business where I was buying and reselling livestock. I'm in debt, lost a wife, psychologically, you know, I'm going through a lot, financially I'm going through a lot, you know. A little bit of, you know, I think compensation will do. And I'm not saying this because I only want money or out of this. But with the failure on the government side, I really think government should take, you know, accountability over these matters, because it's not like they didn't know. They were aware of such things. I mean, they were informed of these things. And that is why you will find that even the police, some of the police were involved. Some of the Indian police were involved in our assassination in Phoenix, you know, which is worrisome, because, I mean, we, again, let me protect myself and say, I hear a rumor that, you know, They knew everything about it and they planned it. It was well orchestrated. And I think I have, you know, a very supportive information over that matter, over that point. Mm-hmm. When I even raised it with the senior police officers here in Trinidad, and they simply overlooked it. It calls for concern when you got such information and you share it with, you know, the senior officers, and they turn a blind eye on such things. So it's quite a lot, and it's draining psychologically, emotionally, you know.
I really appreciate you sharing your story. And unfortunately, as you said, I mean, it doesn't feel like there's going to be justice. But sharing your story, I think, gives South Africans a better perspective. It's not just a report. It's a human story. And I think people can connect with it more. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your ears.
Thank you very much for, as I said, for your time and for sharing your story. Ntlahleleko is July unrest survivor, just telling us his story and how he reflects on that day, unfortunately, as we reflect on the July unrest anniversary.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.